All right. Ryan Neese, thanks for joining the Room Tilters podcast, man. I've been looking forward to spending some time with you on this thing, and it's a pleasure to have you.
I'm excited to be on because I know you guys are on to something here with this podcast. I mean, we all want to find ways to be a room tilter and be an individual or a man or woman that can walk into a room and have people notice us. And we've all probably been in rooms where those individuals have walked into rooms and we can't help but notice them. So, and I'm pumped. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny. I wanted to tell our listeners how we met. I mean, I think we met through Trevor Moad and then ultimately, you know, you were so gracious to invite me out to Next Play Capital Venture and Tech Tour back February 2018. So it's been a minute since then. And, but it was really neat to have the opportunity to visit some elite VC firms and tech companies. I think we visited VCs like Greylock and Redpoint, and then we went to some tech firms like Instacart and LinkedIn and Nextdoor, Twitter, Brandless, which was really impressive. And so it was just a really memorable trip for me because I think I was the black sheep in that crowd. It was with current and former elite athletes from Olympians to NFL and otherwise, and then myself, who was riding on the coattails of those folks. But it was memorable because I think I thought about it maybe differently than some of the purpose for those that were there. I was thinking about it from the perspective of about to, you know, embark into a new business, and was curious to see what those that have been successful at this and what those who have seen a lot are thinking, you know? And so it was really valuable for me. So I appreciate that opportunity.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly why, you know, we extended the invite for you to come, right? I had a chance to hear from, talk with you a little bit about what you wanted to do and some of the things that you were thinking about doing and getting ready to work on. And you guys were getting ready to embark on your own launch of your own type of startup and business and company. And amazing to think that was back in 2018, and not surprised that you guys are off and running and doing all kinds of stuff, including this podcast. So glad you could come and hang out with us, and hopefully you come back and drink some more of the Kool-Aid of Silicon Valley, because they do things a little bit differently out there. So hopefully you can come and hang with us again.
Well, it's addicting, man, because you get up there and there's a certain type of vibe and energy as you kind of walk the streets of SF and some of the surrounding area. And you know, for those who are wanting to be inspired, you're easily falling into that inspiration trap, right? And so it's pretty unique and interesting and really, really memorable. But so listen, you know, for those who may not know who you are and your journey to this point, our listeners, I'd love to, you know, have you provide some of your background, you know, family, where you're from, school, sports, etc., and just kind of give people a taste of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in Southern California, just outside of Los Angeles, about an hour outside, hour east of LA, in an area called San Bernardino, California. Played high school ball, and, you know, played all four sports: basketball, football, track, baseball. Obviously fell in love with football, and probably fell in love with football when I was three, and maybe even younger than that, because my mom sat me in front of a TV and had me watch my dad play. My dad's Ronnie Lott, and got a chance to watch his career over the years, and was very fortunate to be around him and be around the locker room and be around the environment at the 49ers, who were it was a great organization and obviously filled with great players that made great teams. And so getting a chance to see that at a young age obviously inspired me and motivated me and encouraged me and to try to go and pursue that myself. And I was fortunate to be the smart one in the family. That's what I like to tell my dad, and got a scholarship to go to UCLA. He likes to call me the traitor since he's a Trojan. was able to go there, play, and you know, be a starter for all 4 years, a captain, and, you know, play in a Rose Bowl, Sun Bowl, Cotton Bowl. And I think we went to the Toilet Bowl 1 year because we were pretty bad too. So, you know, you got a chance to see it all, but what a phenomenal experience to be at UCLA and be in Westwood and be a part of some really special teams. And again, around really talented athletes, and, And it was, what was amazing is UCLA obviously isn't necessarily known as being a football powerhouse, but we had one of the longest winning streaks when I was there. We had over a 20 game win streak and were able to play and be ranked up in the top five at a number of times while I was there. But also being around the environment of the basketball team and the baseball team and the volleyball team and the water polo team and so on, and the tennis team and all the amazing athletes that came through UCLA that made it one of the best athletic universities in the country. And it still is. Clearly I'm bragging about it, but it just, just was really a special place. And really wasn't sure, Harry, that I was going to get drafted or what was going to be next. I thought I was starting to prepare my life for life after college. And so, I was a double major in economics and political science. Thought I was probably going to end up at law school. Mm-hmm. But was fortunate to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers played there. My first year, won a Super Bowl with the team. My father and I, actually the only father and son in history of the NFL to win Super Bowl rings in our first year. We were the only father and sons to win Super Bowl rings ever until Howie Long's son joined the club, and he has two rings. And so we welcomed their family into our club. And, pretty special to say that. And my dad likes to remind me he has four and I only have one, but clearly we're a competitive family. I played in Tampa for 6 years and then went to Detroit and played in Detroit for a year. Unfortunately, had a tough time in Detroit and because we just weren't a very good team. We ended up being a part of one of the worst teams in NFL history and went 0-16. And, it was really interesting to see that perspective, winning a Super Bowl in your first year and then being a part of a team that went 0-16. You learned a lot about yourself as a player. You learned a lot about the organization, but you also got a chance to learn a lot about business and a lot about the things that I think have helped me today in my roles now. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of it doesn't just come down to numbers or game plans. It really does come down to having the right attitude, the right mindset, having conviction and belief that oozes out of you and provides an environment where people are confident that you're moving in the right direction. And, unfortunately, we just didn't have a lot of that in Detroit. And even though we had really good players, we just never, I really feel we never really believed that we were ever going to win any of the games we played. And therefore, it kind of manifested itself into that. And so it really taught me a lot about mindset and having that right attitude and having a mind, preparing your mind to win no matter what was going on around you. So fast forward, after I finished playing, I ended up thinking I was going to go back and work in Silicon Valley with my father. My father created a very successful investment firm called Champion Ventures, later became HRJ Capital. And the year I retired, they sold the firm. So I couldn't go work there. I went down and worked at a family office in Florida, the DiBartolo family. I'm very grateful for them. They were the owners of the 49ers. They built a very successful real estate empire and got a chance to go work in their family office for a little bit and spent 2 years learning the business and was an analyst with them. And then a buddy of mine called me, said, "Hey, Ryan, I got an idea." He was in business school. He said, "I'd love for your help and to think through this idea." And long story short, we took that idea and turned it into a company, built that for about 4.5 years, and we were acquired by Fox Sports. And that company enabled athletes to create HD videos from their phone and send them to television basically in 15 seconds. And so that was a fascinating journey, and that brought me back into the tech world. And through that process of building that company, which was by far – the hardest thing that I had ever done and challenged me in more ways than I'd ever been challenged in my life, because you're wearing so many different hats when you're, at the very beginning of a company. And as you know, Harry, as you guys are starting and building and doing things on your own, you gotta, everybody uses the word hustle and you gotta have grit. You gotta have, well, there is no off season. There is no days off. There aren't any, substitutes or relief pitchers or people on the bench that are going to come in and sub for you when you're hurt or not feeling well or don't think you can deliver or having a tough day. It's you. It's your company. It's your responsibility. You have to find a way to get things done. And I was taught early on by my grandfather, if it was easy, everybody would do it. And I realized quickly why, you know, startups are so hard and why so many of them and the vast majority of them fail. Mm-hmm. We were fortunate to get acquired. And through that process, you know, I also saw a lot of my teammates and people that I knew in my community that were trying to invest in tech and trying to get into that world. And they would ask me for advice and say, Ryan, check out this deal I'm putting money into. I'd love to see if you want to get into it with me, or, you know, could you give me some advice around what's going on here? And long story short, there, it was a lot of bad things. It wasn't a lot of very exciting businesses or a lot of things that had, you know, a lot of potential to succeed. And so that's when my father and I decided to come together and build NextPlay Capital as a platform to provide individuals in our community, which happen to be a lot of athletes, influencers, CEOs, leaders, and others, the ability to invest with the very best in technology and in the tech world and put money with the best VC funds. And we found that to be very important because it was something that was a need. We wanted to give these individuals that were trying to put money to work ability to do it like an institution, like a very sophisticated investor, and provide them the ability to put money with the folks that were generating the most returns in venture. And that's why we created NextPlay Capital, which I run today. It's based in Redwood City. We have a little over $150 million under management now. We're a very small boutique firm relative to our peers in the space, but we're very grateful that we've been able to partner and invest with some of the best firms and best companies in the entire world. And we're continuing to build on that.
Yeah. I mean, I find that fascinating. I mean, and obviously as I learned more and more about what you guys were doing, your mission, I thought, you know, man, this is smart. It's because not everybody, not everybody certainly that comes out of NFL, NBA, otherwise entertainment media, do they have that literacy, financial literacy to begin with, let alone kind of that investment literacy, that understand that language and even where to start, where to begin, right? And so, you know, you obviously have that literacy based on your experiences, based on your education, based on access and various other things across, you know, the spectrum of your story. And to be able to provide that to, you know, your peers, the community that you've built, is fantastic. Really smart, really awesome. And I think it's, you know, it's still growing and it's still making an impact today. I think that's pretty awesome. I think that I was wondering about this because, I have my own perspective and my own experiences, kind of living in this world adjacent to, you know, my brother as an athlete and then somebody who's, you know, obviously really close to my brother and invested in everything he's doing, you know. And then for you, having met you and spent some time with you, we talk about room tilters and, you know, you're one of those people, you know, in my opinion. Right. And so it's interesting to me because somebody like you, somebody may leave an experience with you and say, okay, like, well, where's the adversity? Because this guy's got his shit together, right? He's got this fantastic business. He's had a history in the NFL. He's created his, you know, behind a legacy of a father that's one of the best ever to play the game, certainly at his position, has created his own, you know, you've taken that and said, you know what, I'm going to create my own legacy. But at the same time, I'm not going to be scared to talk about my experience with my dad. Right. And I'm going to create my own legacy. I'm going to build this thing out. I've created a few companies. I've sold one. I've now got NextPlay Capital rolling. I'm on the board of other organizations and impacting other tech companies. I have a beautiful family and, you know, you have everything going on. Right. But I also know that along the path to getting there's all sorts of moments of adversity that you've probably climbed, right. Mountains that you've climbed along the way. Is there any one or a couple that really kind of were forks in the road for you that kind of catapulted you to think a certain way and have that mindset that you were talking about?
Yeah, it's a great, great observation. And it's a great question. right? Because the reality is, I don't know anybody that's achieved any level of success that hasn't come with a lot of taxation and hasn't come with great pain and suffering and sacrifice. And it's part of the process. And we think a lot that there's different ways and that there's shortcuts to climbing a mountain, but the reality is there really isn't. And everybody's mountain is a little bit different and everybody's climbing journey is a little bit different. And what I think may be tough and challenging and you know, adverse in a sense, may be easy for somebody else and vice versa. Right. And so in my walk and my journey, I am extremely grateful that I am where I am today. But every day is taxing. Every day is stressful. Every day there is a constant tug of war of choices and decisions that are being made versus the sacrifices of my time with my family and friends and versus the dedication and the time and energy that I have to put into, you know, working and building a company. And so when you're constantly pulling at that, you're making these sacrifices in small iterations every single day. And when I look back, there are multiple moments in my life that I think sent me in one direction or another. And one of the biggest was when I was going into my senior year in high school. I was in a very bad car accident. And I was with four friends. I was driving a car and lost control of a car in Southern California. I was driving a convertible Mustang on our way to actually to go to the beach, like I guess what high school kids do in Southern California on the weekend in the summertime, and ended up losing control of the car, and we on the freeway, and a car in the fast lane hit us and bent our car in half. And as a driver, I was completely knocked out. My entire face was crushed. I had lost all consciousness. And so a lot of what happened to me at that point, I was told by some of the others that were in the car, the person behind me was hurt very bad, broke most of his bones in his lower body. One of my buddies was thrown out of the car. Luckily, he was able to hang on and not get hurt to the trunk of all places. The girl that I was dating at the time ended up having severe whiplash and hurting herself. And so going through this very tragic accident where then I was rushed to the hospital, I was in intensive care for 10 days. My eye was detached, redetached my eye, had blood clots in my brain. I had to have plastic surgery where they had to cut me from ear to ear, peel down my skin, and literally almost do like a face-off type procedure and reconstruct my face. Man, I tell you what, that was a very, very tough moment in my life. And at that moment, I thought I could do everything. I thought I was invincible, like most people, I guess, young men that have achieved, you know, some accolades up until that point. And all of it was taken away in a moment's time. And so that's when I really actually realized how important my faith was. I realized how important my purpose was. And in my slow recovery back, I really changed who I was as a person. That accident transformed me to become a much more aware, self-aware person that really relied on my faith first, relied on what God had brought into my life and the opportunities, and to show gratitude and to be humble and to not take things for granted, and to continue to pursue things with great energy and enthusiasm, with a relentlessness that you wanted to exhaust a moment to exhaust life because it could be taken from you. And so that was really an important time and really tough on me. And I realized how tough it was on my family as well. And so being able to recover from that and get back to play football, which nobody thought was even possible, right? Put a helmet back on your head after it's just been, you know, mangled and reconstructed. Didn't think it was possible, but, you know, like a miracle in a sense.
That's crazy, dude. I mean, like, I would have never known that. I think that, you know, everybody's got a story, and that's probably just one of many for you. And I mean, everybody's got a story, man. And I find these moments of adversity really interesting, right? Because I spent a lot of time in my previous career before starting Limitless Minds, building teams, you know, sales teams across, you know, districts and areas and regions and nationally. And I became pretty obsessed with kind of stories like this that are challenging to get to in an interview process because, you know, there's a certain kind of limit to, you know, really what you can dive into with folks without them volunteering information from a human resources perspective, right? But I think it's always interesting to understand for people what's not on their resume, so to say, right?
Right.
What stories kind of have built who you are and make you made or built for this opportunity, whatever it might be, that can give me as maybe a people leader or people mover the confidence that you're going to be the best version of yourself when the chips are down or when nobody's watching or whatever it might be, right? And so, you know, I used to always try to find ways to get to those moments, get to those stories, because they're important when, you know, when building teams and building organizations. And that's one of the questions I had for you too is, you know, you've started a few companies, you've been a part of the building of others in different ways. You've seen organizations hit, you've seen organizations miss, right? Especially these young startups. What do you look for when searching for team members or for talent or to put people around you? Are there certain qualities that you value most in those individuals?
Yeah, that's another really good question because, you know, I'll use a saying that coaches, and I'm sure you've heard your coaches over the years and probably Russ has heard over the years, it's not about the X's and O's, it's really about the Willies and the Joes.
Yeah.
And it is about talent, right? So first off, it's individuals that have talent, that have the ability to be room movers and can come into an environment and deliver and over deliver. And so, and it's hard to see right off the bat in an interview or just off of a resume, but oftentimes you can see somebody's body of work. And if you look in between the lines and ask the right questions, you can do that. So talent is definitely one of the first things. The second thing is individuals that are proactive. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we live in a world where, you know, people can be told what to do and dang it, you know, if they Google it, they probably can find out exactly how to do it on the internet, right? But individuals that take ownership and come into an environment and are proactive around their tasks, their roles, their responsibilities, and what needs to be done, mm-hmm. I think is really an attractive quality to see.
Yeah.
And then I would also say, you know, one of the other things is individuals that are self-aware. They know what they're good at and they know what they need to stay focused on. And they don't necessarily need to be worry about what other people are doing or other people are saying. They're focused on their task at hand. And
yeah.
I think, you know, one of the last thing is I like to use something that my father taught me when I was a young kid. You know, I would go out with my buddies and he'd just ask me one question. Hey, who are you with? He wouldn't ask me where I was going or what time I was going to be back or what our plans were, you know, in between where we were going. He just said, who are you with every time? And one day I said, hey, Dad, I always felt like you didn't care what I was doing or what was going on. And you always asked me, you know, like, who are you with? That's the only question I always remember you asking. He said, well, if I knew who you were with, I had a pretty good idea of what you were going to be doing and when you were going to be home and what kind of trouble or, you know, what kind of non-trouble, I guess, you were going to be, you know, get into. And so I like to use that with people and say, who's your starting five? Mm. Who are the five mentors that you talk to? Who are the five people you spend the most time with? Who are the five companies you work with or sold to? Or give me your starting five. And all of a sudden you kind of work through that and you can get a pretty good sense on what a person is and what they can bring to your team.
I like that, man. Who's your starting five? I like that a lot. My dad, our pops was kind of similar, right? I mean, I looking back, there was always a small group, right? An elect group of friends and really their families, right? That I was allowed to spend a lot of time with. And I didn't understand it then. now looking back, it's very evident to me who and why those individuals were, you know, why they were kind of that group, you know. And to the same point, it was, my dad would always tell us, you know, listen, surround yourself with people who make you better, right? And also, and also a diverse group of people, like people that, you know, make you better for different reasons, you know. It wasn't just about being around the athletes, the other athletes that were great athletes, for example, right? You know, it might have been individuals that were a lot smarter, at least got better grades than I did, right? Or, you know, were talented in other areas, or whose parents maybe had a certain background, whatever it might be, right? And so we definitely share that background with our fathers. And actually, speaking of diversity of thought, you know, I'm certain, you know, you're doing a lot of, like, you're doing, you have a similar kind of thought process as we do from Limitless Minds, which is taking kind of the sports and tying it to business, right? And also, but it's even beyond that, right? Sports, business, military, media, entertainment, et cetera. Yep. And so I suspect that, you know, one thing that you value a lot of is kind of this diversity of thought when building teams, right? And a collective diversity of thought. Would you agree with that? And do you see risks of not having that diversity of thought when building an organization or a team?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And the reason I agree with that is because I was a part of a lot of different teams with a lot of different individuals that came from all different backgrounds that provided different types of thoughts that added to the collective and allowed us to be better. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. One of my favorite presidents and that I got a chance to, you know, study over the years, and an individual that I admired for the way that he was a leader, was Abraham Lincoln. And there's a book called The Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. And I'm drawing a blank on the author, but I think it's by a guy named Doris Kearns. I think that's it. Anyways, I that book is really fascinating to me because Lincoln decided after he won the election to fill his cabinet with all the men who were basically against him or opposed of him, his rivals, because he knew it was going to allow him to be a better leader and help give him perspective and allow him to lead a country that was in a sense divided, right? And so he needed all those perspectives to be able to make better decisions. And so, yeah, as we move through our life, we're constantly, every single day, challenged with decisions that we have to make that are going to be what's best for us, what's best for our family, what's best for our communities, what's best for our businesses, and so on and so forth. If we don't expose ourselves to different thoughts and different perspectives and different ideas, we're going to be limited, I believe, on the ability to make the best decision. And so I'm always a believer, the more information you have, the better chances you have to succeed. And so I agree with the way you guys are approaching that and the things that you guys are teaching around having that different types of perspective and having diverse thought at the table.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah. I mean, I find it interesting, man. We spend a lot of time with a lot of different types of organizations, from startups to well-established organizations across several different kind of sectors. And, you know, it's interesting, man. We do a lot of stuff digitally where we're not, our butts are not in seats, right? We're, you know, virtually people are accessing our digital learning platform, but we also do a ton of stuff live, right? And so we'll have these little leadership summits. We'll walk in there, and it's wild to see how the room looks like the same, you know, the wallpaper, if you will, right? The individuals are the exact same person, right? At least they appear to be, right? From an aesthetic perspective. And so, and right there, it's an indication to me that organization may be missing out on diversity of thought because they're missing out on diversity at a high level, you know? And it's always interesting to me to see how companies innovate without that, you know?
And I think it's it's important to also note that you even though you may have diverse thoughts and you have different perspectives, and that's really important, but, and you know this too, you also have to have a collective goal together, a unified front, a belief in something bigger that you're all pursuing towards one common goal, yeah. Right? Because if you have a common goal that you're pursuing towards, you can take all the different thoughts and perspectives and allow yourselves to collectively work towards that one goal. What sometimes is too challenging is when you have a number of ideas or a diverse list of goals, and nobody really knows where their North Star is or what's guiding them or giving the company direction. And so I'm also a believer that the diversity is important, having different perspectives is important, but you have to have unity in the sense of where you're going and what you're playing for and who you're playing with.
Yeah. No, I love it, man. I mean, and as we kind of, you know, wrap up here, I mean, I wanted to ask you just off the top, you know, what makes a room tilter for you? You know, you've been around, and you've been around a ton of talented people, right? And no, talent's part of it is too, just like you were mentioning earlier, right? But you've been around a ton of talented people. You've been around a lot of different spaces and groups, and you've lived in a home with a room tilter. And I believe that you're one yourself, and you know, your wife is somebody with their own shining star, right? And so, what to you makes up a room tilter?
That's a great question. When I think about a room tilter, it's oftentimes an individual that's very curious, an individual that wants to continue to learn, that is able to sit down at a table and ask questions and is inquisitive and isn't doing it in a way to pass time. They're really present. There are individuals that are gathering information and they're listening more than they're probably even talking. And when you're around those individuals, and especially if they've even achieved a lot of success, that they're so into the moment, it to me, it's pretty amazing, because we all know how chaotic life is. Yeah. We all know how busy we all are and how challenged we all are. And to see somebody that's accomplished so much to slow down, to take time to be there, I think is pretty dang powerful and something that I quickly notice. Whether they're elite athletes, elite CEOs, or teachers that have been tenured, you know, you're around these individuals that have paid their to-dos and have should earn all of our respect, and yet they treat you like you're the person that's on the pedestal. And I think that that's pretty powerful.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, that resonates with me, man. It resonates with me for sure. Well, listen, we really appreciate having you on the Room Tilters podcast, man. And before you go, I had a couple of quick questions for you to, you know, just so our listeners can get just that much more out of their time with you, if you're ready for them. They're kind of rapid fire.
Let's do it. I'm on the hot seat. Let's get it.
This is the hot seat. I know you just came from a nice vacation, so it's fair if this is the place that you answer here. But if you had one vacation, where would you go? One last vacation, where would you head to?
Santorini, Greece. Ooh. This phenomenal island. Go there and put my feet up and be a happy man.
Nice. What about, give us a book recommendation.
Oh gosh. I just did talk about The Team of Rivals. I think that's a great book. I would also say, one of my favorite books, it's kind of an old one, but it's a good one, is Never Eat Alone. It just reminds us to always constantly build network and build relationships and put people first.
Like it. Okay. Favorite music group or artist, dead or alive?
Oh man, God, that's such a hard one. So many, it's hard to pick a favorite. But I will say, if I put this person on, I feel better. I feel more energized. I just feel happier, and I can listen to it over and over and over and over again. It's Bob Marley.
Okay. Yeah. I'll throw on some reggae in the car, and it's a whole different vibe. You know what I mean? That's the good vibe.
Good vibe.
Okay. Last one. Favorite restaurant, and where you spend the most of your time these days? Is it San Francisco or LA?
Most of my time is in an airplane, my wife would say. Yeah. Yeah. But if I'd say most of my time is probably split 50-50 between LA and SF. So
let's do this. Favorite restaurant in SF.
Favorite restaurant in SF. Ooh, gosh. I'm going to go with the side door.
Okay. All right, I'll be making resis there. I'm making some reservations there. Check it out.
Yeah.
But that's all I got for you, man. You're off the hot seat.
I'm off the hot seat. Those are good. Yeah.
Actually one more hot seat question. This is not really one of the questions, but I'm assuming that you're still like go hard on 49ers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to convince my son to be a Niners fan. So yeah,
I think I saw you and your boy out
the other day. I'm sorry to all my Buccaneer fans out there. I'm loyal to Tampa, but once a Niners, always a Niners, because that's how I grew up.
That's right. That's right. Well, we can respect that. I think that it's a big game tonight between the Seahawks and the Niners, and so. For one night, man, for one night, just, maybe you can straddle both sides of the fence, but we'll see how it goes. That's a tough 49er team, man. They look like the 49er teams of old out there, and they got a pretty great squad, so it's going to be a tough one.
No, we'll all be tuned in. It'll be exciting, and this is why we love sports. This is why we love football, right, is games like this when you see teams – that are going to put it out there and lay it all out there in the field. And when you have the competitors like you do, speaking of a competitor with your brother, Russ, at the helm, with the Niners and their defense, I can't wait to watch the battle take place tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It'll be a good one, man. It'll be a good one. Well, listen, man, thanks again for your time, man. We appreciate you, and we'll talk to you really soon.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks again.
Yeah, man.